Mr. Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller, Thomas Kim, happy to address your questions.
Yes, if I could, Governor.
Sure. Here, take it and show me. We're on a very important matter now. Not that yours aren't.
May also mention that I have here with me Chuck Milligan, Deputy Secretary for Health Financing.
Could you just tell us what these items do? Tell me what these items do.
Sure. They are two modifications to two separate contracts within our Medicaid division. I'll ask Deputy Secretary Milligan to describe precisely what the nature of the changes are.
Good morning. Again, I'm Chuck Milligan, Deputy Secretary for Healthcare Financing. Nice to see all of you again. A1, let me start there. This is a contract, an emergency contract that we did in December to facilitate the conversion of what was known as our primary adult care waiver program. This was our very limited benefit package for childless adults. This was part of an expansion from several years ago, but these are individuals who did not have full Medicaid benefits. They didn't have hospital benefits. They couldn't see most specialists. These individuals became part of the Medicaid expansion that took place on January 1st under the Affordable Care Act. We needed to do the emergency contract to convert them from their primary adult care or PAC status into full Medicaid benefits. And the reason this was an emergency is that this was something we had anticipated getting done through the new system, the new eligibility enrollment system at the exchange. But when the priorities changed as we ran up to January 1st, we needed to do this work internally. So that that emergency amendment was worth about $23,000 to do that conversion and get those 95,000 people full Medicaid benefits. With respect to A2, this is an emergency amendment to extend the scope of our Medicaid enrollment broker. This is our vendor that counsels new Medicaid eligibles on choosing a Medicaid managed care organization, works with people to pick the right plan for them based on their providers, where they live in the state, and so on. For the people who applied through the new eligibility enrollment system known as the HICS, they had the opportunity in the HICS to choose an MCO as part of that experience, but that data did not come across to Medicaid. It was one of the items that was deferred for later to make sure that the state was ready on January 1st with getting the eligibility established. So what that meant is a lot of people who chose their Medicaid MCOs in the HICS, we didn't get that data passed over to Medicaid, so we needed to expand the services from our enrollment broker to counsel those people who may have chosen in the HICS, but we didn't get the data to help advise them about their Medicaid MCO options. So that is a contract amendment not to exceed $2 million total funds. There's some federal match in there. We're hoping that as the data comes over from the HICS, we will end the need for those services at that volume from the enrollment broker. But in the meantime, the enrollment broker is really our main vendor to help counsel those individuals and families about picking a Medicaid MCO. And again, that was done on an emergency basis in December when we realized we were not going to be getting that data and we needed to have an alternative means to counsel those people about their Medicaid MCO options. So I'm prepared for any questions you might have about that, but those are the two items.
All right.
Sure, Mr. Comptroller.
Thank you. Apparently, this is obviously required by state law. We're being informed today of this pair of emergency procurements that you just described that are related to the operation of the Maryland Health Exchange. As a matter of clarification, we are not being asked to award these contracts today because procurements for the Maryland Health Exchange are not subject to the Board of Public Works approval. So the first one, as you mentioned, is a contract modification of just over $23,000 with Xerox for development, operation, management of services pertaining to Maryland's point of sale pharmacy system. And the second one, as you described, is a $2 million contract modification, this one to a Denver, Colorado-based firm called Policy Studies to help those enrolled in Health Choice, the Maryland's Children Health Program, select their appropriate health care services. So I do have a couple of questions, if you could help me. What is the basis for the rather modest contract modification with Xerox? Is this I didn't quite understand the scope of what $24,000 is going to be focused on. So if you could help me.
Sure, I'd be happy to answer that question, Mr. Controller. Frankly,
it seems like a relatively small amount of money to be doing an emergency procurement on, but help
sure.
me.
Sure. Well, this was an existing contract, so it wasn't a new procurement. It was an amendment to our existing Xerox contract. So DHMH has a direct contract with Xerox. There are other agencies that have contracts with Xerox about other things. So we had this contract in place. This Xerox has actually been our eligibility system for the PAC program for many years. So when we had brought these childless adults into that limited benefit PAC program, Xerox was the eligibility infrastructure for that. That was where the eligibility determinations were made, the eligibility records were stored. And so Xerox had been, prior to the Affordable Care Act and prior to all of the recent events, Xerox had been passing those PAC eligibility files to our Medicaid payment system, our MMIS, all along. The relatively modest sum is that in the course of converting those PAC eligibles into full Medicaid benefits, we had to map them into the right full Medicaid coverage groups so that they could receive, be placed in our rate, the right coverage groups, which drives how we, the payment levels and capitation rates for the MCOs. So the reason the financial amount is relatively modest is the path, the roadway from Xerox to our MMIS for an eligibility interface existed already to support PAC. It needed to be converted and tested to make sure that when that was migrated to full Medicaid benefits, it worked successfully and mapped people to the right coverage groups. So the relative modest amount is because we had an eligibility connection already with Xerox.
Okay, so apparently it's to take care of these backlogged 2013 applications.
They weren't backlogged, Mr. Comptroller. These were over 90,000 people who had PAC benefits. They were receiving, and so what PAC, just for the broader discussion, the primary adult care program allowed pharmacy benefits, primary care visits, and limited specialty visits. So we had people in coverage in our PAC program. This modest amendment was to really get these people into full Medicaid benefits and to make sure that they enjoyed the benefits of the Affordable Care Act when they became eligible.
I can see that. It's just in my briefing material it reads that this money is going to process any remaining backlog 2013 applications as well as 2013 cases in preserved status to comply with the Affordable Care Act requirements. That's not right?
We did have some applications that came in the end of December for the PAC program that we did process in January, but the main information system, the bulk of that 23,000 was really to do this conversion, not to do the follow-on of completing the people who had applied in December for PAC.
Okay. Let me just move to the $2 million contract. My notes indicate that Policy Studies, the Denver group, already serves as an enrollment broker for those who are eligible for health care through the exchange. Just to clarify, does Policy Studies simply serve those who are enrolling in the exchange, or does it also provide services for those who are trying to take advantage of other state and federal health care programs?
Policy Studies Incorporated was acquired a few years ago by Maximus. So the contract amendment is to our existing contract, now held by Maximus. This is our vendor that advises Medicaid enrollees about their managed care options. So this contract doesn't support any of the sort of broader exchange-related work. The reason we needed to do this emergency amendment is we had expected that those people who chose an MCO in the HICS, we would get that data, we would enroll them in the MCO they selected, and the enrollment broker wouldn't have to do that work. It had been done because the applicant chose their MCO directly in the HICS. But because that data didn't come over, we didn't know what MCO they might have chosen, and so we needed to reach out to them to capture that information to get them in the MCO they wanted.
I'd say my background notes, once again, state, and I quote, Because of technical problems plaguing the health information exchange, a large number of newly eligible enrollees who were anticipated to receive assistance with their managed care organization choice through the exchange will instead require assistance from the enrollment broker to select a managed care organization. So the health information exchange, I take it, that is the website that's been so heavily criticized as dysfunctional?
Mr. Comptroller, the health exchange includes the website you're referring to. It includes also the entities that are advising people in the exchange about choosing their insurance companies, Medicaid as well as commercial carriers. That work happened. I mean, the connector entities, the navigators, the sisters, and others helped people choose their MCO. So that work in the exchange occurred, and the data for many people who chose their MCO was captured in the HICS.
Okay.
However, that data did not come over to Medicaid, so we don't know the MCOs they chose, so we had to start that work through our vendor that does that MCO counseling activity.
Okay, so I'm just trying to figure out, frankly, what this enrollment broker, quote unquote, actually does and how it fits into the process. If I'm a potential consumer trying to figure out which plan mm-hmm. is best for me and I need some help navigating the enrollment process, at what point do I come into contact with an enrollment broker? And does this broker actually provide a live person on the other end of the phone line, or is this just another automated system or website that some poor soul will have to figure out on their own?
Mr. Comptroller, our enrollment broker contract does several services. One is they do provide live help, including in-person help. The reason that we have the enrollment broker contract, even with the exchange's enrollment support, is that some people go through the HICS and don't choose an MCO. So we get the file, but they elected not to make a choice. We get the eligibility record from the HICS, but in Medicaid, we need to ensure everybody's enrolled in an MCO, and the enrollment broker will then counsel people who may have, just for whatever reason, neglected or chosen not to pick an MCO. But also, the enrollment broker supports a lot of Medicaid eligibles who are enrolled in managed care who have no relationship whatsoever to the HICS, because these are people coming over from, for example, the federal Social Security income programs and disability programs, where the care system operated at DHR is their eligibility system. So even if everything was working perfectly at the exchange, we would need to have an enrollment broker for people who didn't choose an MCO in the exchange, as well as people coming over from the existing CARES eligibility system who are
okay, I got that.
For part of the health choice program.
So HICS is the health exchange.
I'm sorry for the shorthand. The HICS is the IT infrastructure at the exchange.
Okay. So how much was the original contract with Policy Studies in Denver?
I don't remember that figure offhand. It's been a multi-year contract.
Anybody with your... Well, maybe you can find that out.
I will find that out.
What kind of performance metrics are you being used to measure the effectiveness of Policy Studies? What assurances, I guess, can you provide the board or those people watching at home that this broker will deliver a far better brand of customer service than apparently has been available up to this point on the exchange?
Our regular enrollment broker contract has various performance metrics, including when to do the outreach, how many touches to make. One of our performance measures is that we expect them to help 80% of all new Medicaid eligibles choose an MCO, because if somebody doesn't choose an MCO, we automatically assign them to an MCO. And then the person can change their mind if they were assigned to one they didn't like, but they get enrolled. With respect to this emergency amendment, we waived some of those service level agreements because they received many thousands of records in the very first week of January, and they had a huge upsurge of volume they needed to take care of, and it would not have been appropriate to hold them to the same performance measures. But having said that, we have not at Medicaid heard any complaints whatsoever from new eligibles, advocate groups, or others, or the MCOs that we have not performed well reaching out to those families and helping them choose.